Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. The American people have spoken, but what exactly did they say? Let's get to the bottom line. The American people went to the ballot boxes this week, and it sounds like they want the political temperature in this country to go down a lot. Tens of millions of votes have been counted, and many more are still being counted. But it's likely that the Republican Party will win a razor-thin majority in the House of Representatives. They might have been hoping for a big red tidal wave, but it seems more like a pink splash. The Democratic Party avoided its worst fears. They were bracing for a knockout punch due to the rising cost of living across the United States. But it was more like a slap on the wrist. If this was a referendum on President Joe Biden, he didn't do too badly. Still, he's going to have a hard time running the country his way with a big part of Congress against him. So now that the votes are being counted, which way is America going? And what lessons are both parties taking away from this election? Today, we're talking to Janelle King, former deputy state director of the Republican Party in Georgia and host of the podcast Let's Talk About It, and Robin Johnson, Democratic Party analyst and host of the podcast Heartland Politics. He teaches political science at Monmouth College in Illinois. Let me start with you, Robin, and thank you both for joining us. Robin, I you know, there's a lot of different spots of, you know, what's happened in the country, and I've got my own views. I'd love to kind of hear, what does Heartland America see in this? What do you, you know, being an informed political observer, see are the biggest lessons to take away from what happened this week in the elections?
For the fourth election in a row, the American people divide the pundits and the experts and had their own say on the future of the country, which I like. As you said, this election went kind of opposite of the way that a lot of the pundits were saying. It was a big surprise as the evening went on what happened. And I just think there's a lot of layers to uncover here on what happened and why. And I think it's going to be interesting when all the data gets in, when all the numbers get in to look at, because, for example, Florida went heavily Democratic, Republican, and really cannot be regarded anymore, I think, as a swing state. Iowa, next door to me, where my show airs, it went solidly Republican. Upstate New York did as well, but in a lot of other places, the Democrats won. And it's going to be interesting to look at the broader themes as we look at the numbers in and look more and more data on what exactly happened and why.
Well, let me ask the same thing of you, Janelle. And I should tell everybody, I went to parties, you know, before the count had begun, both a Republican-oriented party and a Democratic-oriented party. And let me just say the Republican-oriented party was rather buoyant. They expected to win about 40 governorships, about 240 seats in the House of Representatives, and at least 54 Senate seats. So, Janelle, what happened? What is your take on all that?
I think we were celebrating a little too early. You know, I know I mentioned this to you before, but I absolutely didn't feel the momentum that I felt like my party was projecting. And that's because I talk to people outside of the political bubble that we all live in. I talk to people who are outside of the echo chambers that that we see a lot of people living in. And when you get to people who are legitimately just trying to live their lives, take care of their families, pay their bills. They don't have the time to put into the political space. They rely on people like us. And that's the people I talk to because I feel like that's who I'm representing every time I have this platform. And when I talked to them, I heard that there was going to be a split ticket. And I heard, especially here in Georgia, and I also heard that that the abortion topic was more of a wild card than I think people thought. While it may not have been the number one issue coming out in polls, there were a lot of people on both sides of the aisle that really felt strongly about this. There were a lot of pro-choice Republicans that I spoke to who were feeling torn. So, you know, you take that, you throw in the fact that we had some candidate quality issues, and you throw in the climate, and you kind of shake it all up, and you really don't know how it's going to fall out. But I agree with Robin on this one. I love it when I see the people decide.
Georgia may not have a winner in the United States Senate as of this week. You may see a situation in which the two contenders, the incumbent, the Democrat Raphael Warnock, who's in the United States Senate, challenged by football star and Trump-endorsed Herschel Walker with a lot of complexity, may have to go to another runoff in about a month. Can you tell us a little bit about what that feels like? And did you expect that?
Yeah, so the polls showed us that that was more than likely going to happen. So we were not too surprised that we are looking at a runoff. But for those who are watching who don't know, in Georgia, particularly in Georgia, you have to get 50 plus one extra vote, 50% plus one vote in order to outright win. So I actually like that method because to me, it basically says that over half of those who have voted have to support you rather than it being, you know, we have low turnout and it just so happens that the other side or our side, you know, gets a majority and then it determines everything. So I like the way we have it because it puts extra pressure on turnout and it also puts extra pressure on the voters. But I do think that, you know, because we were anticipating this, it's not too much of a surprise, but we didn't want it. We did not want a runoff situation, primarily because of the fact that, you know, Herschel Walker has been really kind of battling through with this. Warnock is the incumbent. He does have a record to run on. And they continue to pull things out of Mr. Walker's past that, you know, kind of throws this up in the air once again. So now we haven't declared it a runoff as of right now as we're recording this. But I will say that it's looking like it's going to go in that direction. I know they're counting some absentee ballots and some of the uncounted votes that came in early. So we're going to see it. But they're really neck and neck.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm going to pull out my phone here, folks, and this is on purpose. I reached out at about 5 this morning to the White House Chief of Staff, Ron Klain, and I got, because I know I woke him up, the first response of the Chief of Staff this morning today, as we're taping this, to the elections, and I published it. It's on the record, and I asked him, I said, what are your takeaways, Ron Klain? And he writes, a strong night for the president and his party, a rejection of a U-turn and make America great again extremism. Robin, I'd just be interested in your take on Ron Klain's take. And, you know, when you step away historically, when we were expecting the incumbent party, the controller of the White House, to, you know, be delivered a knockout punch, as usually happens. Did it happen to Barack Obama? It happened to President Clinton. But if this holds, I mean, right now, President Biden had the best performance in a midterm election of all. I mean, I find myself surprised saying that, but I'd be interested in your take.
Well, it's interesting he mentioned talking about the accomplishments because my criticism was that Democrats were not talking about their accomplishments. I think they had a compelling case to make that some of the legislation they passed in the last 2 years were designed to address the problems people are facing. And I didn't hear a lot of that. We had a lot of ads about abortion, which I think did play a big role in this. There were other ads more centrally focused on issues in different regional locales. But I didn't see a lot based on the accomplishments of the last 2 years, which I thought was a surprise. And I think it could have perhaps helped Democrats even more. So that is somebody who considers himself more in the moderate wing of the party. I was a little exasperated that they were not talking about economic issues more. And I think it did serve to kind of hold down some possibilities of success that wound up not being there.
So I'm just sort of interested, does this change the dynamic now, where now there is a pride? And we now have had reports from Politico that have said at very senior levels that now Joe Biden will run, that this is the validation of Joe Biden, and they're saying he will now run. But, I mean, is that what they should be feeling?
There were a lot of factors involved here, and I certainly think abortion wound up playing a big role. The numbers I saw last night on young people voting and participating, and they voted overwhelmingly Democratic. Regardless of your party, you've got to feel good about that, that young people are engaged. Did they vote because of abortion, climate, or student loan forgiveness? I don't know, but they did vote. There was video of lines of people, mostly students, waiting to vote, like up in Madison, Wisconsin, or in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So I think that was heartening, but again, I think Biden's well served to talk more about his accomplishments in terms, not in terms of the details of legislation and these obscure names they call these bills, but in terms of the difference it's going to make for people at the human level. And I think there's a story that can be told there. The infrastructure bill, the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, all have elements of them that I think are going to really make a big difference at the local level. But people haven't been told that. They haven't been, it hasn't been explained to them how that will make a difference. And I think that's a big opportunity leading into 2024 for Democrats to do that.
Janelle, when I mentioned Ron Klain's comments about the economy and, you know, dealing with inflation and the cost of living, I saw you cringe a little. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I felt like Democrats didn't want to touch this issue because the fact is the Inflation Reduction Act did not reduce inflation, and it didn't plan to. I mean, it was more so of a climate change act. But I don't think they wanted to touch this issue because of the fact that they know that they're kind of, they will have to answer a lot of questions to the American people. So I wasn't surprised by that. I am surprised that that's something they're touting because I like Robin, I didn't hear one Democrat, you know, using President Biden as a as a resource to help garnish votes and garnish support. So I don't know. I definitely think that that was more of a political statement, more so than a reality. I think that the two issues that really stood out, like I said, was inflation for Republicans and abortion for Democrats. Now, The increased turnout in young people definitely, I believe, balanced it out a little bit and helped Democrats or did what it did in Georgia by sending us into a runoff because we did see some minorities leave the Democratic Party. And I think these new younger voters kind of made up the difference. But the problem the Democratic Party is going to have is keeping them engaged because these younger voters are coming with a very, very progressive mentality, a very progressive agenda. When we were speaking to students at a university here in Georgia, one of the questions was that was proposed to us was, how is it that capitalism is something that is so good when communism is good as well? And I, in my mind, I was just kind of like, wow, this is interesting because I haven't seen in my lifetime anyone who made a case, a positive case for communism, and here in America. So this is a new group. This is definitely a new group that's coming into the Democratic Party.
Janelle, let me mention another thing. I want to just tell our audience that, you know, I happen to know that you've had encounters with President Trump. I've seen him call you out from the stage, your husband out from the stage. You know, so there's some sort of relationship there. But I see President Trump as basically trying to clobber a lot of rivals within the Republican Party. And he spent a lot of time trying to take Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, the successful governor of Florida who just ran again for re-election there, called him Ron DeSanctimonious for not being gracious enough for President Trump's endorsement in the past. And lo and behold, Ron DeSantis basically beat his rival by nearly 20 points, which is an extraordinary performance. What Robin just shared is saying the red wave really did hit Florida. Marco Rubio did an extraordinary job against a very good candidate, Val Demings, a black former Orlando police chief who had served in the House with a distinguished record. And so I guess my question is, what does that do within your party with the popularity, with a lot of basically conservative commentators right now are not expressing great admiration for President Trump's behavior? You know, how does it all get put together again? Or is it now we're going to see Humpty Dumpty not be able to put back together?
You know, I think it's important to add that when you look at this, if you poll my party and you ask the question, how many of you supported President Trump and supports his policies versus the question, how many of you think President Trump should run again? You're going to get two totally different answers. That is what we're dealing with right now. The reason why you're going to get totally different answers is because we all saw the benefits of having President Trump in the White House as a result to policy and being able to deliver good, strong policy. But on the flip side, I think he's his own worst enemy because he continues to make comments that puts us in a position where when we are talking to people at dinner, at events, and doing everyday things, you feel like you almost have to defend him because you're really defending his policies and you're really defending what he has produced for this country, but you don't want to defend the person because you don't agree with the personality that you're getting. And that's what we're running into. The reason why I believe Governor DeSantis did so well is because he brings the hammer, he brings strong policy, but he also brings an era of compassion. He also brings a connectivity with the people. And I can't let this moment pass without acknowledging my governor, Governor Brian Kemp. right? Governor Kemp took so many hits from President Trump when it came to opening up our state early. He was the first to do it, even before Governor DeSantis. When it came to appointing Senator Loeffler, I know President Trump was not happy about that. On down to running Senator David Perdue against him and really backing him and backing Candace to try to push Governor Kemp out. Well, he defeated all of that. He defeated the narrative and he defeated Stacey Abrams. And I think he needs to definitely get his flowers and get his recognition for being able to do that. That's a huge thing. But I do think that me personally, if I had to make a prediction, I think it's going to be a struggle getting President Trump out of the primary in 2024 if he chooses to run, because Governor DeSantis is definitely coming.
And real quick, next Tuesday, there's going to be a big announcement, allegedly, by President Trump. Are you in favor of that big announcement?
You know, personally, I would love to see fresh new blood. I think that President Trump would be better as a kingmaker than the king. And I really would love to see that personally. Mm. And when I say kingmaker, I don't mean handpicking candidates that are your friends. I mean getting behind strong candidates that can win. I think he can definitely be strong in that area.
Robin, you know, one of the things I candidly had a few doubts about were President Biden's two speeches about this election being one where the fate of democracy was on the line, because I felt as if those people who were reasonable Republicans, pragmatic Republicans, were being told that they were empowering something. So I didn't know how it would come out. But I'd love to learn from you and get your perspective, particularly a Heartland perspective, on that, you know, fate of democracy messaging. Because I sort of feel like we got democracy in this race, whether it was from President Biden's encouragement or not, because people who thought they knew the outcome have been surprised. The outcome, this is the way democracy is supposed to work. You all accept the process. You don't know how it's going to come out at the end. But love to get your sense of whether that rhetoric was helpful or was it potentially hurtful?
You know, it's like everything else. It's seen through the lens of polarization and depends on your party. I do think there's enough people on the Republican side. And I think from Janelle's territory, Brad Raffensperger is one of them. I think the governor of Georgia, Kemp, is another. There are enough Republicans down the line, especially in suburban areas, women who agree that democracy was to some degree on the line, perhaps. And I think they're the ones that shifted and made Biden president. But they also, keep in mind, 2 years ago, elected quite a few Republicans. 2 years ago, we were talking about Democrats not fulfilling expectations. So, I think that talk of democracy, I'm like you. I saw a lot of people kind of rolling their eyes about that, but perhaps it had some kind of impact with folks that are concerned about that, including those in the middle. There are still independent voters out there. There's not as many as there used to be, but they're still the ones deciding elections. In Georgia, you had a significant number that voted for Brian Kemp, but then voted for Raphael Warnock. So, and we saw this in other places like in Wisconsin. So they're not gone. They're still around, and they still do decide elections. And it'll be interesting to look at data coming up to see if that did have a role in what how they felt. Again, out here in the Midwest, things are so polarized. What I see is it just depends on your party affiliation, whether you agree with this threat to democracy or not.
Well, I think it's really important for our audience to understand what you just said, is that millions and millions of Americans split their ticket, meaning they voted for, you know, Brian Kemp, a Republican for governor. They voted for a Democrat for senator. That is something that many people look at this as a healthy move. It's sort of interesting that you raise that. But very quickly to both of you, and I'll go to you first, Robin. Before the election ran, there were a number of very famous Democratic analysts and said wokeness has destroyed the Democratic Party, that the woke agenda has really mortally wounded the Democratic Party. I think we have to now go back and say, hey, was that right? What are your thoughts on it, Robin, and then Janelle?
In the Midwest here, a lot of the Democrats win because I'm from an area that's Obama-Trump. The county I live in voted for Obama twice, then Trump twice. And there is a feeling that things have gone a little too far with wokeness, I think, with a lot of voters that decide elections out here. So I would just caution Democrats to not do an end zone dance just yet over these results. I think, number one, I think a lot depends on if the Republicans are able to win the Senate, then Nevada's seat is going to be critical in that. I think if Georgia goes to a runoff, as long as Trump stays out of it, I think it'll probably favor Herschel Walker. But what I'm seeing out here in the results so far is a continued just decimation of the Democratic vote in rural counties. Republicans just pile up big margins in rural counties. And also in some of the old factory towns that used to be Democratic, used to be heavily union. You look along the Mississippi River in Iowa, all those counties up and down used to be reliably Democratic. They're Republican now. The same is in a lot of places in Michigan and across the heartland, Pennsylvania, Ohio. It's the key is still being able to win majorities within states, and the rural and factory town type vote is still going to be critical in that. I think Fetterman did a good job in Pennsylvania of reaching out to rural voters to reduce those overwhelming margins that Democrats were losing by. The floor's dropping out. It used to be Democrats would get maybe 40% of the vote in rural counties, then 35, then 30. Now there's a lot of counties Biden didn't even get 20%. You can't keep doing that and expect to win and get an overwhelming vote out of urban and suburban areas. So I would, you know, it's a victory for the Democrats last night, no question about that. But I wouldn't be doing the end zone dance just yet.
Janelle, let me get your thoughts on the politics of wokeness, but I want to add on to it because you and I have spoken about it before, about the proliferation of identity politics, particularly around race and inequality, these kind of divides that are out there, and your provocations on that front.
When it comes to wokeness, I am 100% against it. And the reason why is because I just don't believe in any system that creates winners and losers and determines who those winners and losers are outside of meritocracy, outside of hard work and just being excellent. I think that while there are outliers, there are obviously individuals who are going to choose and play the identity politics game and even play the identity game, even in corporate America. I do know and I do think that those are outliers. My husband likes to say, let's live within the standard deviation. And I think that when you look at the majority of people, we live within the standard deviation. When it comes to my business and our company, we are not looking to hire people based on the color of their skin. We're looking to hire people based on their ability to get the job done and do it well. So I think if we continue to make that the focus, we will see the diversity we're looking for. We had college students on Mercer College campus, the college Republicans at Mercer University told us that they believe that meritocracy is diversity. We've got to get back to that.
Well, fascinating conversation. We're going to leave it there. Republican analyst Janelle King and Democratic analyst Robin Johnson, thanks so much for your candor and for being with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So what's the bottom line? Democracy is way bigger than elections. It's about fair courts and about minorities who have rights and checks and balances on power. But a big part of it is having no idea what the outcome of an election will be and then accepting whatever the results are. And that just happened this week in the United States. There was not one big issue that moved all Americans. Some were moved by abortion rights, some by inflation, some by crime and racism and the environment, or drugs, guns, even foreign policy. So American politics are still really a patchwork. No one party has a definitive hold on the course Americans want to take. It's kind of like they said, Biden isn't so bad, but Trump's not the answer. Now the hard part is all sides are going to have a conversation or deal with each other at least and figure out together which direction the country goes. And that, from my view, is an excellent thing. And that's the bottom line.